Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I used to live on a patch of farmlands. I'm only writing this now as I have experienced something last week that has reminded me of what I've come across and denied, and one that nearly cost a life or two. The backstory is largely irrelevant, as the incident was sudden. This starts when I first had the experience to see it unfold in my childhood. Where I lived, there was a large rural patch of lands, and I was an incredibly outdoorsy type person. I resided in a small cottage that rested on fresh grass the animals would feed on. My dad owned a flock of healthy sheep, who provided us with good quality milk, mutton, and wool. The typical day was me going out in the creek to collect and release the minnows that darted in the clear water. I was fascinated by everything, and I'd rush to the wildflowers and observe as the bumblebees buzzed around them, with their pollen baskets full to the brim on a bright sunny day. Occasionally, I would see the swallowtail as it fluttered across the weeds which grew, and I was also keen on watching the rabbits and hares leaping across the pastures. My passion for the outdoors and nature was something that caused me to form some extremely pleasant memories, where I'd exhausted myself out in the day, and return with the family to hydrate myself with fresh, pasteurized milk. When I was about 5 years old, an unusual occurrence began to unfold. Every now and then, we'd find a sheep that'd be attacked and mangled. We'd assume it was a canid or perhaps a bear, but something about the way these particular sheep were killed seemed odd. Throughout my stay in the old area, we'd come across 18 sheep that died in the exact same way. They'd been eaten from the inside, and for each one, the back of its head was stabbed, as if whatever had killed them probably targeted this location every time it attacked a sheep in the flock. These weren't old deaths, very recent, in fact. We still see the blowflies swarming around the recently exposed flesh, their bright metallic colors glistening in flight. A month after these occurrences came a day I'd never forget. I remember this night as clearly as the date it happened. My parents, uncles, and aunts gathered to discuss what's been going on with the lambs. It started off as some disease or a loose bit of machinery that these unfortunate creatures caught themselves in, but the discussions became dark, including topics about wild beasts or a dominant ram killing the younger lambs. My dad then dismissed me and my siblings, ordering us to go to bed. Thus, I never knew what they discussed fully, but that wasn't important to the events that unfolded. Somewhere in the middle of the night, I had woken up to use the restroom, and I'd come back to lie on my bed. We had a window in our little cottage, which I'd always peek out of before sleeping, and today was no different. I watched a young lamb walk into the scene. It scratched the ground under it to create a comfortable place to rest. There were no other sheep, and it was the only animal at this location. I watched with a warm smile on my face as the lamb rested on the depression in the dirt. It was a pleasant sight for me, and the half moon was bright enough for me to see. After what was about a couple of minutes, I saw a shadow loom behind the lamb. I was overwhelmed with confusion. Dad and Mom were asleep, and my uncles and aunts had returned to their homes. I felt the thumps in my heart begin to speed up. It moved forward, revealing its hand. I may have been a child back then, but I knew it wasn't a human. I couldn't really describe it back then. It was long, spindly, and the arms were equipped with talons. Within seconds, my confusion had formed itself into fear. The thing stepped into frame, and when I saw its face, I covered my mouth as I was about to scream. It looked human, but twice as large. It was bald, stooping, and had a large, frowning mouth with its teeth hidden within. I watched it approach the sheep, and it brandished the talons on its arms. Without making a sound, it plunged them into the back of the sheep's head. Its neck went limp and it outstretched its legs, and I watched as the sheep's nerves kept firing. After a few seconds, the sheep had become completely motionless. The hunched creature sliced an incision in the sheep's stomach and began to feed. I trembled in my bed. I could not describe the horror I experienced as I watched this monstrosity commit this carnage. Its pure silence says not a single noise was made. It had finished feeding, and it raised its head, turning away to leave. I suddenly, without any warning, sneezed. The beast abruptly stopped and turned to look towards me. I felt my heart literally stop. The creature's eyes glowed as it stared at me for a few seconds. It walked towards me, and as I opened my mouth to let out a scream, lunged forward and bit the neck of the sheep, carrying the cadaver and then walking away, only to disappear. The encounter wasn't very detailed, as I had been a kid, but it haunted me. I hadn't been able to sleep for a while. The next day, I told the whole thing to my dad. However, he dismissed it as a dream. He'd never believed me, and had what happened last week not taken place, I would have believed him fully. The killing of sheep stopped there, and we'd never seen a sheep go missing when we lived there anymore. 6 years later, we moved to an urban town, and the encounter with the thing had been buried in my memories, something I denied and eventually forgot. Upon moving, I'd met one of the neighbor's sons with whom I'd become great friends with. His name was Henry. We were both boys, and he was a year younger than me. He was somewhat frail, with light brown hair and gray eyes with a hint of blue. He was slightly shorter than me, and I was a year older than him. We shared very similar hobbies, which really helped us in becoming the friends we are. When I was 16, I thought it would be nice for us to visit the old cottage for a week. The location was somewhat far, but the road was isolated, and it wasn't too rocky. I figured we'd go out there by bike. We packed our supplies, which included a fishing rod, a lighter, a few blankets, squeezable shampoo bottles we'd filled with water and used to wash up after doing our business, a few waterproof tanks, a pot to boil the creek water so we don't ingest any dangerous pathogens, a bar of soap, and a shovel. I also took my pocket field guide that I made myself back when we lived there. I divided the supplies between me and Henry and packed them in cylindrical bags whose straps wrapped around our chests. Before leaving, I went to my dad's basement and fetched an old, slightly rusted pistol and a tin which contained its bullets. Henry looked at my hands as they brandished the weapon. "What is that for?" he inquired skeptically. I, who lived in these lands for years, answered almost instinctively on the spot. "Lest we find a hare or two to eat," I replied. The look on Henry's face seemed to relax, and within about an hour we departed. I waved goodbye to my father and thanked him as he gave us the supplies. He also provided us with two sheepskin jackets, warning us that it's cold back there. It was a long and tiring journey, but it was safe. Henry and I rested our bikes on the walls of the cottage, which had fared well through all these years. We rested our exhausted legs and soon made our way into the house. We chose to stay in my bedroom, as it had two beds and plenty of space. We unpacked and discussed about our plans for the week. The day was relatively bland in relation to the story, and so were the days leading up to the event. For the sake of the story, I will only talk about the days it happened. In the afternoon, I requested Henry fetch some water from the creek, and if he needed anything, he'd call for me. He was back in about a minute, clutching the full water tank in one hand, and in his other hand was something else. What's that? I asked. I don't know, he exclaimed, as he ran to me, and I held my hand out for him. He loosened his grip, and I observed the thing. It was a glossy black creature, which looked like a centipede whose front legs were long. It was about twice the size of my middle finger. It had powerful jaws and a flattened head. As I watched the creature writhe, I was overwhelmed with a sense of nostalgia. I looked up at Henry, who was staring at me expectantly. "That's a Helgramite," I told him. "It turns into a Dobson fly, and it looks like no other bug you've ever seen." I immediately reached for my field guide and flipped to page 59, and there it was. A crude illustration, but recognizable nonetheless. Henry stared at the illustration of the full-grown animal. I could describe it as having large wings of a dragonfly, ash gray with a brown shade, a strong, robust body with a dragonfly's abdomen, and the thorax and head of a carabid beetle. Its mandibles were long, like scimitars that clashed together. The drawing didn't do it justice. "It's an indicator of good water quality. They don't tolerate pollution," I continued. Henry then returned the insect back to the creek, and the day went on normally, until nightfall. Deep into my slumber, I felt something crawling on my back. I dismissed it as some sort of weird, dreamlike event. Eventually, it felt unbearable. I jolted out of my bed and looked at what was causing this itching sensation. It was Henry, his hands tapping at my back. Recently, he had been increasingly physical with me, and it felt off. I never asked him what was going on when he did, but now I was immediately asking. "What are you doing?" I asked, irritated. I was tired and beyond confused. He hesitated, looking at me before he began to speak.
"There's something that doesn't make sense here," he replied, with equal confusion, ushering at the window.
I got out of bed and looked. It had begun to snow. We were in the middle of spring. What was going on? Henry stood next to me in utter confusion. My irritation formed itself into a sense of interest. Perhaps it's a weather anomaly, I said with uncertainty. They were common here. Sometimes it would pour buckets in summer, and sometimes we'd have scorching days in January. That seems to reassure him, and soon enough, he was fast asleep. The next day went on as usual, until the sunset. We went to sleep, or more accordingly, I did. I woke up from thirst, but before I got up, I saw Henry lying next to me. I was enraged.
"Why are you doing this?" I yelled.
Without any hesitation, Henry got up from my bed.
"I'm genuinely frightened,"
he began, with an audible tremor in his voice.
"I know you have different creatures in the rural lands, but I'm not sure if you've ever seen it."
"What do you mean, it?" I asked. My rage began to subside, and again I was confused.
"The thing," he replied.
"What thing? Could you describe it to me?" I demanded. He immediately listed the features of what he saw out that window. And as he did, my heart sank. He talked about a gray, human-like creature. He said it stopped over with a hunched back. It was bald and twice the size of a human. What got me was how he described its hands as having talons. I came to my realization, and what happened a decade prior.
"What's wrong?"
he stammered, looking into my visible expression of fear. I grabbed my father's pistol, loaded it, and gestured for him to come with me. We ran into the now snowy landscape. We wandered into the night, with my pistol locked in my right pocket and a few provisions in the other. I made sure Henry was already alongside me. I needed to find the answer to this. I needed to know. What I saw at the age of 5, the thing that haunted me for almost a year at most, the thing that had haunted me for a year at most, has returned to my mind. All I could think of was the thing Henry had described to me. What stood out the most were its talons and hunched back. He'd also told me about its long neck, like a swan with the head of a withered man. My mind was so focused on the thing, I had forgotten I was able to defend myself against it. We had wandered about a kilometer from my cottage, and then, without warning, I fell to the ground. I helped myself to my feet and glanced behind my back. I only saw it for a split second, but that image was something I could never find enough words to describe. It was monstrous in proportions. Its long arm possessed more muscle power than any human being's entire body. Its legs were bent like that of a human, but its feet resembled hooves. Its hands were plunged into the snowy ground, and I'd not seen the talons. It had a long neck, like a swan's, just the way Henry had described it to me. Its head was bald, with a huge frown, a gaping black mouth, which hid the teeth of the beast. Its eyes were like flashlights, radiating a bright, white reflective sheen. Henry was calling for me. Using my footprints as a guide, I sprinted in their direction. I yelled for Henry to follow me. I sprinted through the snow, and soon enough, I began to hear his shoes crunching against it as well. I felt relieved, knowing he was fine. However, the thing had begun its pursuit of us. I could not see how it ran, only the softness of its sprinting. That thing had never made a sound in its life. Not when it killed a sheep before my very eyes, and not when Henry saw it, and not when it chased us through the snow. That's what I found the most horrible. The fact that it does not go all out on you, but does what it can to ensure you go out without emitting a whisper. I felt the cold air rushing into my lungs, and its temperatures caused them to feel as if they'd been encased in a packet of ice. I ignored the pain. My body began to ache and my legs weaken, but we continued to sprint, and then it pointed towards a standing wooden wall. I ran and took refuge behind it. Henry then came next to me, lacing his fingers between mine. I didn't care at this point, but then it hit me. "The pistol," whispered Henry, his voice tired from the cold. "The pistol," I thought to myself. How could I forget? I immediately took it from my pocket and unlocked it, ready to fire at the thing. With Henry's hand clasped in my right and the pistol ready in my left, I vigilantly peeled behind the wooden wall. Before I even reacted, the wooden wall shattered. The thing kicked at me with its leg, slamming my back against the sharp splinters. I collapsed to the ground, and it swung its neck towards Henry, and its jaws shot out like a shark's. It threw him without effort, and I saw his body get tossed at least 10 meters away. It then slowly walked towards Henry, as he struggled to lift himself. I could barely move and watched as the creature looked at me, as if to say, "Nobody is going to save you." It turned its head to Henry, and then everything went black. I believe I'd got unconscious for a few seconds, but I was suddenly woken up as I heard Henry's screams. It was heartbreaking. I had never heard such a sound of fright and despair come from anybody. I tossed my head against the snow, desperately prodding, until I felt a short metal rod. I threw myself forward and grabbed the tossed pistol. The thing was too preoccupied with Henry to even notice I was getting up on my feet. I looked and raised the firearm, clenched in both hands. It had begun to use its talons to claw at the cloth that covered Henry's calves and was getting ready to tear into the muscles in his legs. I felt my own legs. I cannot describe the agony I was enduring. I felt as though my tendons were being poked with pins that had been held over a fire. My legs buckled as I struggled to hold the iron ring of the gun at the body of the beast. I tried to aim it away from Henry and closed my eyes, pulling the trigger as much as I could. I heard several gunshots, and then my body fell to the ground, giving up in exhaustion. I opened my eyes, and the thing was looking at me. It lumbered away from Henry, whose screams faded as he looked at the thing. I watched it, and red pools began to form at certain parts of its body, before it turned to streaks, which ran down its grayed-out, wrinkled skin. I had shot the thing at least 5 times. It let out an exhale before it turned from us and limped away. That was the only sound I ever heard coming from it. There was a silence for a few minutes, and then Henry got up. However, I, myself, was still lying down on my back, supported by my arms. I saw a few scratches on my shin, and the snow had seemed to absorb the impact of the throw. He trudged in my direction, and once he was close enough, hurled himself at me. Henry held me in a tight embrace, and with a voice filled with horror, exhaustion, and pain, uttered these 2 words. "Thank you." Henry laid his head on my chest and broke down. I felt my eyes sting along with immense pity, but also relief. I raised my back and threw my arms around him. I felt my shirt soak, hearing nothing but Henry's sobs. It went on for a few minutes. "Don't worry, it'll be all right," I said, feeling a lump in my throat. Henry began to calm a bit, and soon enough, I began to see the rays of sunlight peek over the horizon. I managed to get up, holding my hand out for Henry. I helped him on his feet. "It's gone. We know our way back, and we'll be home early," I reassured him. He wiped his tears with the sleeve of his shirt, and a subtle smile crept on his face. Our journey back home was again long, but we never encountered anything like it again. I narrated the story to my relatives, of whom nobody believed me with the exception of my dad. As for me and Henry, it strengthened our friendship as we became inseparable, considering all this happened just a week ago. I don't know what's going to happen with this in the future, but one thing I'm grateful for is that it did have some good result on me. I, however, would never forget the night. I stayed up 2 separate nights just by thinking about this encounter. There's an old road in my hometown that runs through some very old land. The woods there are protected because they're part of an old watershed that fills reservoirs downstream, which provide water for half the state. So it would be very bad if that water was tainted. And so the land is protected, and so the land is old, as is the road. And so some very strange things have been seen on that road and in those woods. Though most people don't believe what they see, I do. Today I will tell you about the wolf pack. Why wouldn't someone believe I saw a wolf pack? Wolves aren't uncommon, especially not in our neck of the woods. At least, not ordinary wolves. And when I first met them, that's what I thought they were, too. Ordinary wolves. But if they were, perhaps I wouldn't be here to tell you. But before I can tell you about the pack, I have to tell you about one in particular. Names have power, and I don't know what he is or what they are, so I'll refer to this one as the Red Pup. He's likely not a pup by now, but when I met him, that's how he appeared to me. I grew up in the woods. My family has always lived next to that old land, and it became my backyard. I found my wanderlust in those old woods. The fauna, the flora, the rocks, even, entranced me. My father taught me about mosses and lichens, how to track animals. A family of beavers became my neighbors. The mountain became my true home. And to this day, I cannot live away from mountains. I wandered those woods often, though my mother had a fantastic rule to keep me safe. If your shadow is longer than your body, come home. I didn't always follow that rule, though. I got lost in thought sometimes, more lost, perhaps, than some get in the woods. And so, one day, as a young boy, staring too long at the fault lines in a rock, did not notice that not only had my shadow grown long, but it had grown faint. The woods were growing dark. And in old woods, things move about in the dark. I heard a rustling in the bushes, and I was scared. I knew there were bears and coyotes in these woods. I did not expect what I believed at the time to be a small dog. I don't know how to describe how I was equal parts terrified and delighted in that moment. I had noticed that something small was walking towards me. I knew there were things out here in the dark that could hurt me. I did not know that this cute, squeaking, fumbling brown thing was that, and looked altogether non-threatening, and shyly nosed my hand. His fur was a deep brown color, though, again, it was dark, but his eyes, they were warm and misty, like a wisp of steam from your cocoa that dances and moves and is easily blown away, yet returns just as easily. His fur was warm, and he nosed at me to get up, so I did. He took a few steps away and looked back over his shoulder. Even a child understands this look. I followed him. He led me over some rocks, under some logs, and around some boulders. The wind brushed my bare arms. It was summer, but the night was still colder than the day. He dropped back and walked beside me, leading me with my palm on his shoulders. Looking back, he was much more aware of things going on around us than I was, and much more concerned. He kept looking back behind us, and tugging me along with renewed fervor. I will never know what followed us, and that might be a good thing. It was dark enough by the time we reached my backyard that I couldn't see the grass anymore. He stopped at the edge of the woods and nudged me onward. I looked back at him, and he stepped backward, vanishing into the dark. Once again, I became afraid and turned and ran towards the light of my parents' house. My mother scolded me for not coming back sooner, sat me on time out for a half an hour, and I was not allowed to have dessert that night. I looked out the window for my wolf pup friend. I did not meet the red pup again until a few years later, while I was out hiking with a friend. I had grown up a bit and had advanced in school. I knew more about the woods now. I was more aware of the dangers and how to avoid them. We get bears there, but they don't bother me. Most people don't realize bears are timid creatures. They just like to be left alone. They are only fearsome when they are provoked and have something to defend. Still, don't bug them. They want to be left alone, mostly. People who don't know me well enough call me an idiot because I don't respect the woods, but they are usually people who don't know the woods like I do. It would be more accurate to say I don't fear the woods, and even more accurate to say that I don't fear being hurt by it if I show it proper respect, which I try my best to do. We were out hiking with my friend Steve and his dog, a young German shepherd named Smokey. He's dead now. He lived to be 13 before being put down due to crippling joint pain. But I think he was 3 years old at the time, and loved hikes. Steve lived near a different part of the same old woods. It's a very large forest, and an even larger mountain, with lots of hills and glens. We took Smokey for a walk along some of the old quad trails. We were in our teens and didn't mind the dark so much. We walked until the sun was nearly down, and we built a fire pit. We both loved fires, but who doesn't? They're warm, bright, display woodsman skills. You can burn things if you're into that. I liked to take pictures of it and draw it. While we were sitting, I spotted a glint in the darkness, sort of like what you would see on the back of an animal's eyes. I looked up and saw the eyes looking down at us, then looked over to Smokey, curled up next to Steve. Interesting. Smokey usually knew what was up. I checked that Steve and I both had sticks and knives handy, and eyed a particular stick in the fire that was sticking out part way. I could grab it easily if I needed a fire weapon, but the eyes drew no closer. They stayed put right there, settled over a rock a good distance from the fire. They seemed unnatural, not like the reflective glint of a real animal's eyes. They were misty, like smoke on the water, like a mirage I wasn't sure I was really seeing. And at this distance, a smoky should have noticed. I felt a bit intimidated and decided to point it out. Steve looked where I pointed and Smokey perked up as we both moved, but Steve couldn't see anything, and I figured I was imagining things. I wasn't confident the eyes were actually there, after all. Perhaps they were a reflection from a few pieces of glass. Someone might have thrown a bottle into the woods, for all I knew. I would never do such a thing, but we weren't the only people who came back here. After a while, we doused the fire and followed the trail back in the dark, Smokey following ahead or behind us at his whim. I heard something move through the leaves and turned, expecting to see Smokey next to me. The shape was right, but this wasn't Smokey, and the fur was the wrong color. This was a deep chocolate brown with hints of crimson. It looked up at me, and those eyes. It was the same wolf pup. His eyes truly are strange. They were my first real clue that he wasn't natural. They glisten and glow a warm, fiery light, as though they truly are flames. Flickering, moving, so that you could never focus on any bit of detail. But if you just stare unfocused, there they are. I believe I've already described them as a mirage. I put my hand out, and he walked next to me so that my hand fell on the back of his neck. I could hear his pants, and he sounded happy. I called to Steve and told him my wolf pup had returned. Immediately, Steve turned around and looked where I was gesturing, but he couldn't see anything. He turned on his flashlight, and now I could clearly see the light falling on the animal beside me, revealing brilliant russet fur. Steve insisted there was nothing there. He stepped forward to touch the spot that I insisted had a young wolf standing, and the wolf pup moved out of the way, like he didn't want Steve to touch him. I expressed this, and Steve just rolled his eyes and accused me of making it up. I got angry. I don't lie, and I could definitely feel the fur beneath my hand. So Steve just said, "Sure, whatever," and started walking back to the house. The red pup nudged me along, so I followed. He walked a bit away from me for most of the trip, but I was glad to have him there. It was like seeing an old friend again for the first time in a while. I smiled at him, and his eyes radiated a very kind warmth. We made it back to the house, and once again, he stopped at the edge of the woods, not entering the property. He turned and looked at me from his side, before walking slowly back into the darkness of the woods. I almost wonder if something else was out there that night as well. It was a year later that I saw him again, and this time, I met his pack. I was out with several friends this time. We were in the woods behind our friend Devin's house, having a big fire. We scouted out a good spot earlier in the day, a nice clearing, where the trees weren't close enough to catch fire. The stump of a tree had been ripped out long ago, leaving just a few stubborn roots and a nice little hollow about 2 feet across. My friends all gathered rocks while I kicked leaves away from the hollow, following a 10-foot radius of just dirt and roots, then returned to the little hollow and built a round wall for the fire. My dad was an EMT and on search and rescue, so through him I had met some of the rangers and fire marshals in the area, which meant I knew the rules for a safe fire that they wouldn't destroy when they found it. These are protected woods, after all, and the rangers will destroy any fire pits that don't meet their standards to discourage drunk teenagers from causing problems. At least 1 foot high on the outside and 1.5 feet on the inside, and 10 feet or more to anything flammable. They never removed fire pits that I built. We got the fire going, had some drinks, cooked a steak that my friend brought. It was a great time, and we were a good 1/2 mile through dense woods from the nearest house, Devin's. A potential danger if you're thinking like a parent. Permission to be jovial and rambunctious if you were thinking like a teenager. As the night went on, the air got cold. Quite cold for a summer night. The wind had picked up too, and we decided to douse the fire so the wind wouldn't carry sparks to the dry leaves. I went to go carry some of our things back, and I saw something from the corner of my eye. A wolf. I immediately took a defensive posture, but as it looked at me with eyes that glowed warmly, and walked with its hackles down and tail up, I realized who it was. It was my friend. The wind gusted then, and his entire body shimmered, like he was made of mist held together by force of sheer will. He looked into the wind, then back at me, and whimpered slightly. I looked at him quizzically, but he had no way to tell me what was wrong. He followed me back to the house, and then back to the fire. I took a couple of trips to carry our drinks, our trash, and our chairs back to the house. Finally, we got everything, when Cody said he forgot his jacket. We took a flashlight and went to go get it. My red wolf pup was there on the trail, blocking my way. He wasn't really a pup anymore, but I still think of him as that little pup that I met that one day. Cody ran right past him, but he wouldn't let me pass. I wondered what was wrong, but he gave a quick yip, and then there was movement behind him. Several more wolves, just like him, materialized out of the bushes and from around the trees. They all had the same misty, shifty eyes, like a mirage, but their coats were silver. I didn't count them, but probably about 10 or 12, probably more, actually. I took a step back. I'm dead. But the red one looked at me pleadingly. What do you want? I thought. Cody stopped, noticing I had fallen behind, and turned back to ask what was up. He was standing 10 feet from me, shining a flashlight on a pack of wolves that he very obviously took no real notice of. They parted as he walked up to me, and I just stared at them incredulously. I told him nothing, that I thought I had spotted something, but it was nothing. The wind was picking up, so I held the flashlight while Cody rubbed his shoulders, and we basically ran to the fire pit. The pack followed. His jacket was there, still hanging on the tree where he'd left it. The fire was out completely, but there was still steam rising from it. Cody threw his jacket on, and we turned to go, and I was really glad to leave. Not only was it windy, but the woods felt uneasy. When you spend enough time in the woods, as I do, you gain an affinity for them, and you just sort of feel when the land is off. Something was wrong, and I didn't need the misty pack of wolves that only I could see to tell me that. They helped, though. The trees creaked and groaned, and I could feel tremors in the ground like it was quivering. Afraid or angry, I couldn't tell, but there was a queasy feeling in my stomach, like something was very, very wrong. I never thought I'd feel so glad to be in the company of shimmery, definitely not ordinary wolves. Cody tripped over a rock because he's an idiot who doesn't go into the woods often enough. Maybe I came in too often. Either way, he dropped the flashlight and broke it. He swore and complained about how we were going to get back. Looking around us, I decided I wasn't worried. The pack surrounded us now, at least 20, and I realized I could still see them. Silvery, misty wolf shapes that shimmered like a mirage, with eyes that glowed like soft wisps of smoke. Instead of facing inward, they all faced the way we had come, toward the house. The red one walked up to me and gently grabbed my hand, tugging on it. Okay. I put a hand on Cody's shoulder and told him I got this. Really? He asked. I nodded, and that was enough for him. My friends know I know the woods. I nodded to the red pup, and he started forward. I followed him. Cody followed me, and the pack followed all of us. They circled us, too. I could see them shifting, rotating as they led us through the otherwise pitch-dark woods. Some of them looked over their shoulder, and when they did, their eyes shone with a fiery glare that made my blood chill, as I realized I had only ever seen their friendly eyes before. There was no question in my mind now. The woods were uneasy, and those wolves were protecting us from something. Something that would probably find us if we didn't leave, and that would not be a pleasant experience. Cody seemed calm with me next to him, and with a silvery pack of wolves surrounding us. I felt confidence we could get back, but with the knowledge I deduced, it was hard to relax. When we got back, I didn't bother looking behind me. I knew they would just retreat into the dark like the Red One always did. I gave a backhand wave as we rushed to the house, and we all sat down to play cards. Later, I mentioned to Devon that I'd met a pack of wolves, and his eyes went wide. I think he actually believed me. He said he had never seen any wolves, but the woods back here had plenty of spirits, some more friendly than others, and it was possible I'd met something benevolent. I opted not to tell him that we had most likely nearly met something not so benevolent. He didn't show it, but I think he knew. It had been his call to douse the fire, after all. I don't know what these wolves are, or why they appear to me, or why so seldom. I think they are protecting me, but again, I don't know why. Maybe it's because I respect the woods, or maybe they just like me. I don't know. I've only seen the full pack one other time, also on a dark and windy night. The Red Pup has come to me several times, sometimes for company, but nearly always to lead me out of the woods when it gets dark. I've never had anything to offer him, and I don't know how to summon him. I don't live in that town anymore, but every time I return, it has new surprises for me. Those woods are old, and some very strange things have been seen there. Though most people don't believe what they see, I do.